Welcome back to the third hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It is 508, 70 degrees on this Friday, April 18th, 2025. Good Friday. And like most Fridays, I like every Friday, it's time for Do I Have a Case with Attorney Keith Figured of the Figured Law Group. Keith, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show today.
How you doing, Rob? Pleasure to be here.
All right. So big weekend plans? You doing anything for the weekend?
Just family stuff. Have a dinner at home. Parents over, wife, parents, and some family. So nice and low-key.
Yeah, it looks like the weather's going to be all right for that. So hopefully it's a good time.
Sounds like it's going to be beautiful out there.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so we're going to dive into it right now. And I'm sure the listeners will figure out where this is coming from. But can a public entity like a county that maintains an official social media presence disable the commenting feature?
So the short answer is yes, a public entity like a county official can disable the commenting feature on its official social media presence. From what I came across, courts have generally upheld that public entities can limit or disable comments on their social media pages as long as the decision is viewpoint neutral and does not violate First Amendment rights. One example I saw was a county may disable comments to manage resources, prevent misinformation, or avoid legal risks, provided it does not selectively censor specific viewpoints. And I think that's kind of where the sticking point is, because whether or not that limiting of the comments was due to a specific viewpoint, I think, is up for debate. But that being said, if the entity allows comments but moderates them in a way that discriminates based on viewpoints, then they could face legal challenges under the free speech laws. One case I saw was Knight First Amendment Institute. This is actually versus Trump, which suggests that public entities must be cautious about how they manage interactive spaces on social media, as they can be considered public forums. So disabling comments entirely is typically seen as content neutral action and less likely to challenge than selective moderation.
All right. Great answer there. And it does answer a lot. I've seen some entities get in trouble for selectively removing certain comments. But if you shut it down for everyone, it's considered neutral. Am I right there?
Correct. Yeah. So if it's, for instance, here, if they just shut it down due to the assessments or, a specific issue and then turned it on for other issues, I think they'd have a problem. Now, if they've turned it off and they keep it off and it continues to remain off into the future, then they're probably less likely to have an issue.
All right. Well, great answer there. So next question. My neighbor has an outdoor wood-burning boiler where they often burn their household garbage, is causing an awful black smoke and smell. I've complained to my township to no avail. Do I have any other option or recourse?
So, the problem you have here is it typically when these types of claims, again, there's a difference between a claim that's on a contingency fee and then a claim where you're going to hire an attorney and they're going to want a retainer, and the attorney gets paid whether they prevail or not. A lot of cases like this, whether you have claims against the property, whether it be interfering with your use and enjoyment or other issues that can arise under this scenario, the biggest issue is going to be the cost in pursuing the claim and whether the uncertainty of prevailing. That being said, I think what the individual initially needs to do is understand local and state regulation. They can check their local ordinances. Many townships, counties, or municipalities have specific rules about open burning or the use of outdoor wood boilers, which I guess are labeled as OWBs. These may prohibit burning household garbage, plastics, or other materials that produce toxic smoke. Now, it indicates he did contact the township already, which would have been the first thing that I would have recommended. The second would be, and I wasn't sure if this was in the, I didn't see this in the response, but potentially the code enforcement officer or zoning officer to request clarification on the local ordinances. And the reason I think they want to do that before engaging in the attorney is a save down on the cost. They could look up their ordinances and then contact the zoning officer and or enforcement officer. This way they have a good idea of whether or not anything is actually being violated. I think the other thing is that who was there first is a big issue in these. You know, you probably heard or seen in news, you know, whether it be like a pig farm or something comes next to a development and then all of a sudden the smell. Well, if the pig farm was there first, obviously it's going to be less of a likelihood of prevailing against any type of litigation than if the pig farm came after. I think it's the same thing here. If this is something that developed or they were doing it beforehand and they moved in the area as opposed to vice versa, can also be a major factor in determining if the individual was to pursue this in litigation. But that being said, I mean, there's other stuff I can get into, but I think the most important thing here is to understand the local and state regulations to see if there is any violation. Once that is understood and they contact the zoning officers and they get some information, then at that point they would want to reach out to an attorney specializing in some type of real estate practice, because those attorneys are going to be the ones that deal with this type of claim, and they're going to know to what extent or whether the facts are sufficient, or at least they should, and explain to you based on the scenario. And they can't give you a guarantee of prevailing, but based on their experience in going before those judges on a regular basis, they should be able to let you know whether you have a viable case or not.
Yeah, and like you said, that the question is vague, saying they complained to the township. We don't know if a court enforcement or such was in there. And state regulations, could the state DEP possibly help them if there was noxious burning being done?
Oh, absolutely. I think any time something that is burning, especially if he's burning plastics and those types of things, that to contact the EPA, I mean, they're always another avenue that they can pursue. Now, to the extent that they would respond, just in prior cases, I know, depending on, I think I had a case not too long ago, not necessarily a case, but someone had contacted me, and there was a lot of blue, basically the creek had discolored. So I know in that specific instance, they contacted the EPA right away, and they sent somebody out to check it, and it ended up just being somebody was treating their pond, I guess, put too much of a chemical, and it overflowed into the stream. But they can have someone come out like that, possibly, if they were to contact the EPA.
All right. And our final question here, and just on a note of those outdoor wood-burning stoves, I have some experience with them, and if anyone's listening who is doing that, I know it maybe seem like a good idea to get rid of your garbage that way, but it is horrible for your wood-burning stove, your wood-burning boiler. So I would recommend not against it, because you'll probably be cutting the life expectancy of your boiler tremendously by doing that. So last question today, if an employee is injured while performing a task that is outside of the scope of their regular duties, but is still requested by their employer, is the injury covered under workman's compensation? So it sounds like their employer is asking them to do something that's not typical of their job duty.
So again, quick answer for this is yes. I've actually dealt with these specific claims. The easiest way to explain this one is that any time, even though it might be, and I guess the term here, what makes it a little bit not necessarily correct in terms of the question, is that the employee was injured, and it's not necessarily that they weren't in the course and scope of their employment when they were injured, but it wasn't a regular job duty or function that they are to perform. In that regard, what happens is, and there's a number of instances where this arises, where it puts the injury into the course and scope of work to make it compensable. And in this specific incident, any type of activity, and where this comes up a lot, is say, like if you go to work party or a work Christmas party, something like that, and somebody gets injured, and you say, hey, this wasn't the course and scope of work. Well, but it was something that was requested and part of the job. So in certain circumstances, that does fall and does amount to a compensable injury. Another example of that is where you'll see is a lot of times where an individual parks. If a person is required to, say, park across the street in a certain parking lot, once they park in that lot, even if it's not the employer's premise, premises if they get injured, if that's a lot they're required to park in, even though they're not clocked in for work, they can be determined to be in the course and scope of work. So the bottom line is, if something like this happens, there is a lot of nuances and exceptions. So as I always say with comp cases or workers' comp, that's one of the few areas where you don't want to hesitate getting an attorney. And the reason I say that is if you get an attorney early on, it's likely that attorney, if they're a good attorney and they're not just looking to attach to your benefits, but if they're looking to help you and guide you, it's more likely that you can get your claim accepted, which then means more money in your pocket while you're treating and off from work, as opposed to having to file and go before a judge. And the reason that's important to get an attorney early on is because the only way my fee attaches is if I actually have to go to court and I'm successful. If I'm retained early on and somebody comes to me with an issue like this, it's easier for me to navigate them and have them do what they need to so that they have the evidence to meet their claim rather than them do things that they don't know or detrimental to the claim that I can't fix later on. So the best advice I could give in this is, anytime you have an injury at work and it's uncertain, it's best to contact a comp attorney. They can clearly let you know whether it's in the course and scope of employment and what your rights are and the best actions to preserve the evidence to make your claim more likely successful.
All right. Great answers. All three questions for this week. You're getting a shout out on the chat line here at the station. Just wanted to say hello to Keith from brother Bob Chase. So Bob Chase is saying hello to what's up to you listening today to the radio. So, Keith, if someone wants to get in touch with you offline, how can they get in touch with you to talk about a case?
They can contact me directly at 570-954-9299. I currently have a website at figuredlaw.com. However, hopefully in about a month or so, that's going to be changing. The new URL is going to be wehelptheinjured.com. So that'll be a new website that's going to be upcoming in about a month or so. But my current website at figuredlaw.com, I have I could get inquiries through there 24/7. And then, of course, my email you could send to me at keith@figuredlaw.com.
All right. Great things happen over at Figured Law. And if you want to get a question featured on a segment of Do I Have a Case, you can email me at rob.odonnell@odyssey.com. rob.odonnell@odyssey.com. And we'll get those questions featured on a future segment of Do I Have a Case. Keith, you have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us this week.
You as well, Rob. Always a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners. And shout back out to Bob Chase.
All right. Sounds good. You have a great weekend, my friend. All right.